We do have a lot to cover, and I'd like to get finished in time if, you know, maybe you have some comments or questions at the end. So when we think about cancer, I've said many times that cancer is a cruel disease. The cancer is cruel, and the treatment is cruel. They're both very cruel. Brother Bob said he likes to ask the group if there's anybody in the group that has had experience with cancer. And so I'd like to ask that question. Have any of you had cancer yourself? So there's a couple. But the question that I'd like to ask is, how many of you think that you will be diagnosed with cancer at some time? Well, you see, that's a question. Some think maybe, some maybe not. And I don't know the statistics in this group, but I suspect that someone in here who has not had experience with cancer before will probably have experience. What I have to share today is what happened to me, so it's from my perspective. I'm going to give you the facts that I learned, but there's interpretation that I'm going to leave up to you, because there's things that I can't interpret, but you can. The purpose that I see today is to inform you about the illness, what the patient experiences, so that you can give care. I mean, your pastors, it's question. You know, I learned information that I wish I had known in giving pastoral care. I mean, terms that I didn't know what they meant. Anatomy. I mean, there's parts of my anatomy that I didn't know. And so I'm just going to be honest with you and tell you what I learned, and maybe it'll help you. So I've divided it in a couple parts. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about how cancer works. I'll tell you what happened to me. I would like to talk a little bit about giving encouragement to someone. And I have a list of do's and don'ts. And then there's a spiritual factor, and there's some practical lessons that I learned that I would just like to share with you, because maybe you could learn from that. So, first of all, how cancer works. Again, you know, we have a doctor here in the group, and maybe I didn't learn it quite right. And Brother Bob, if there's anything that I say that's completely wrong, I'd like you to speak up. But when you ask the doctor why you got cancer, they say to you, well, there's two reasons. Either it's hereditary or it's environment. And environment is anything that's not hereditary. Okay? It might be what you eat. It might be laying in the sun. It might be anything. Cancer is labeled by the primary site. In my case, I was diagnosed with colon cancer. When it spread to my lung, I didn't have lung cancer. I had colon cancer in my lung. Their cancer is classified in stages. And I'll give you the simplified version. Stage one means that wherever the tumor is or the growth is, it's confined to that space. As it leaves that space and gets into adjoining tissue, it's another stage. If it leaves that site, that's another stage. When it gets to other vital organs, that's stage four. When I was diagnosed with stage four. Another thing that you'll hear over and over again in treatment is it only takes one cell. So when I was diagnosed, I had a tumor in my colon. I had two spots on my liver, and I had five spots on my lung. And, well, I'll give you the details when I get there. There's a couple other things. The doctor will tell you, we can't chase cancer all over your body, because as it metastasizes, goes to other places, you just can't keep chasing. You can't keep cutting things off or cutting things out. And you just can't chase it all over. Usually, and it seems like the preferred treatment now is to treat the cancer before it's removed. And so, you know, I'm as fearful of cancer as everybody else, but when I go to the doctor with a tumor and they say, well, we're going to talk about chemo first, I say, get that thing out. I want to get that out of me. I don't want that in. But what they're concerned is when they take it out, if they leave one cell or if one cell escapes, it's gone other places. So I understand that what you're trying to do is get rid of all the cancer cells, as many as they can, before they cut it out. So for me, it was they prescribed 6 months of chemo, then radiation, and then surgery, and then chemo again. The chemo drugs that I had was one that's called 5-FU, which is a common cancer drug, or a common chemo drug, oxaliplatin, which I think is used pretty much, and Avastin. Avastin, and I understand, used to be used for breast cancer, and they took it off the market because it was for breast cancer, because it was too harsh. But in my case, with colon cancer, they gave me Avastin. Avastin is prescribed primarily for tumors. In cancer, if you have a tumor, there's no blood flow on the inside of the tumor. Since chemo drugs are distributed through your body, through your blood, you can't get inside to the middle because there's no blood flow. And that's why they use the radiation. It's my understanding that the cancer drugs are all work similar. They go after the quick dividing cells, the cells that divide rapidly. And that would include all the places where you have mucus, where you have like the inside of your mouth, your nose, your throat, your stomach, your intestines, your nails, your hair. And that's why a lot of drugs cause hair loss, because it attacks those fast dividing cells. If this is, again, my understanding that the drugs, when a normal cell divides, the drugs keep the divided cells from growing. So it actually doesn't kill it, it just keeps it from dividing and growing. Okay, you with me? There are side effects of the drugs. First of all, it affects your immune system because it affects your white blood count. So a person that's taking chemo drugs, their resistance is very, very low. Because it affects your internal linings, it causes you to have nausea, a loss of appetite, a metallic taste in your mouth. The drugs cause neuropathy, which is numbness in your extremities. Your hands get numb, your feet get numb. They warned me that I should not walk barefooted, because if you step on something sharp and you can't feel it, the oxaliplatin causes cold sensitivity. And, you know, the first time I went for chemo, they said, now this oxaliplatin is going to cause you cold sensitivity. So you be aware of that. You know, I used to be a really healthy guy. Hey, what's cold sensitivity? I can handle a little cold. And when I got home that day, it was a cool day. It wasn't a cold day. And I went to touch the door handle to open it, and I couldn't open the door. It just felt like there was pins jagging in my hand. It's completely cold sensitive. I mean, cold sensitive is a mild term. It hurts to touch anything that's below room temperature. I found that on these drugs, or maybe it's the cancer, it causes one to have a less resistance to stress. I just didn't want stress. And any relief of things that I didn't have to worry about was a really great thing. What keeps a person going is hope that after this treatment, it's going to get better. Or after this surgery, it's going to get better. As long as the person has hope, you can endure a lot. But when there is no hope, it's really, really hard to endure this kind of a stress. So for me, when I turned 50, I went for colonoscopy, and they found a polyp, and they said, there was a little cancer on the end, but we took it off, and we think we got it. And so you'll come back, and we'll check you periodically, and so on. It was about when I was 56, and I saw some blood. I didn't think it seemed right. I asked my family doctor, and he said, don't worry about that. That's nothing to worry about. And I felt that it was more than that, and I went for another colonoscopy, and the doctor found a tumor in my rectum. And then he said, where this tumor is, you need to go to a teaching hospital because of the location of the tumor. He said, where do you want to go? I don't know. I didn't even know what a teaching hospital was. So he gave me three choices, and I chose one. It started to hit us because now I'm going to Johns Hopkins, and everybody that I know that ever went there died. And only the really, really bad people go there. I don't mean behavior bad. I mean physically bad. So I went to Johns Hopkins, and they said, we aren't doing anything until we check you out. So they checked everything. We sat down with the doctor, and she said, Mr. Martin, you have stage 4 colon cancer. We're not talking about a cure. But we think we can prolong your life, she said. When we talk about seeing life with different eyes, let me tell you, right there is where my eyesight changed. She said, and we can make you more comfortable for a while. And I said, how long? She said, as long as you feel that the pain that you get from the treatment is worth the life. And when you can't handle treatment anymore, then you make that decision. I want to tell you, brothers and sisters, when you're sitting in that chair and hear that, nothing else matters. I also found later that at that moment, I had a 30 to 50% chance of being alive in 5 years. A very close friend of mine was diagnosed after I was, and he died last summer. So she said, we're going to start you with chemo and see how you respond. We're going to do 12 chemo treatments. So as I started taking chemo, they started doing tests. They'd do CAT scans. And after a few treatments, went to see her, and she said, you're responding to chemo. The tumors are shrinking. We've decided now we're going to go for the cure on this one. Now, you know, of course, Carolyn was a little bit upset with the news beginning, and me too. And you know, we said to ourselves, why does she say things like, you know, there's no cure and all that? But in retrospect, in hindsight, she did the right thing because we now started at the bottom. And whatever we got, we couldn't go to her and get bad news anymore. If we got any news, it was always good news. So when she said, we're going to go for the cure on this one, that was good news. The reason they decided to go for the cure is because I responded to treatment, because of my age, because of my health. And all of the doctors involved meet together in a tumor board and they discuss these cases. And I found out later that they had this tumor board meeting and the one doctor said, I think we can go for a cure on this one. What do you think, colon doctor? What do you think, chemo doctor? What do you think, radiation doctor, lung doctor, liver doctor? And they went around the table and they all said, I can do my part. So I went through the chemo, and after 8 treatments, the doctor said, you responded enough. We're going to stop chemo. We're going to send you to radiation. 28 radiation treatments every day of the week, five days a week for 4.5 weeks. Oh, it'll be 5.5 weeks, for 5.5 weeks. So they said, what we're going to do is you're going to have 3 surgeries. You're going to have colon surgery, then you're going to have liver surgery, and then you're going to have lung surgery. And I said to the doctor, I said, look, if I understand my anatomy right, my colon and my liver is not too far apart. How about you do 2 surgeries at once? Well, they talked about it. Okay, they'll do 2 surgeries at once. I met with the colon surgeon, I met with the liver surgeon. Before I went for colon surgery, who was a woman, and the liver surgeon was a man, before I went for surgery, the woman said to me, the colon doctor said to me, Mr. Martin, I have a disclosure that I have to make to you. She said, are you aware that the liver surgeon is my husband? I went to surgery with the husband and wife. The wife did the colon and the surgeon and the husband did the liver. I'm not sure, but I think they were doing surgery and she said, honey, did you take that garbage out like I asked you this morning? I'm not sure. If I understand anatomy correctly, when you eat food, food goes into your stomach, leaves your stomach, goes through your small intestine, which is below here, comes out on this right side, ascends up on the right side, goes across the top and down the left side and into the rectum. The reason I joked about anatomy is because when they said to me, you have a tumor in your rectum, I knew I had a rectum, but I didn't know where it was. Really, I didn't. But when your small intestine enters into your large intestine, your small intestine is called your ileum. Your large intestine is your colon. The last 4 to 6 inches of your colon has little gates in it. That's your rectum. So because the tumor was near the very bottom of the rectum, when they did surgery, they removed the rectum. I still have a muscle at the end, but I don't have those gates. So, because of the colon surgery, they said, you will have a bag, an ileostomy, so that where my small intestine comes out on the right side, they brought that out through my skin, and I have a bag that goes over that. I bypass my large intestine, my colon completely. I didn't use that. They promised me initially that I would be that way for 3 months. Then they changed it and said 6 months. And in those 6 months, I learned how to use this bag. And every single person I talked to that had a similar surgery and had those gates removed has a problem with incontinence. And I said, I do not want that. Can I keep the bag permanently? And they said, you made a wise choice. Too many people have the surgery, have it reversed. They are prisoners in their own home because they don't want to leave the house. There is no control. And so Every doctor that I've talked to since said, you made the right decision. So I have an ileostomy. I have a bag. The difference between an ileostomy and a colostomy is, one is where it comes out, but an ileostomy is more liquid. Your colon forms the stool, takes water out of the stool, and it forms it. So what I have in my bag is unformed products of digestion. How's that? Is that sensitive?
A plus.
Okay. So I had the surgeries. They removed a tumor from my colon. It was cancer. They took two spots off my liver. They were not cancer. So they said, the next surgery is your lung. I initially had five spots in the lung. The chemotherapy got rid of two. I was left with three. So I met with the lung surgeon, and he said, I think I can go in there and take those three spots off. But to go in there, I need to go in through your ribs. So what we're going to do is we're going to go in through the side, and if I can't use my laparoscope to find them, because he said, I need to feel them. I need to feel them to know where they are. If I can't use my laparoscope to find them, I'll need to get my hand in between your ribs so I can feel them and cut them out. And he said, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to have intense pain for several weeks. This is very painful. Well, I'll tell you what happened when we talk about the spiritual side. I had the lung surgery. They took the three spots off the lung. Two were cancer and one was not. Went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, how do you feel about more chemo? How about 12 more treatments, 6 more months of chemo? And I said, doctor, I want to do anything I can do to get well. He said, okay, we're going to do 12 more treatments. You know, in my life, there's many things that I look around and say, that's never going to happen to me. I didn't think this would happen to me either. But there's a time when that happens that changes the way you view life, the way you view friends, the way you view the most valuable things around you. If I ask you the question, do you think it's going to happen to you? And you said no. You know what my next question is? Well, then what is going to happen to you? Right? We don't know. So when you say you don't think it's going to happen to you, you're really just denying that anything is going to happen. All right, let's talk a little bit about encouragement. And I said earlier that the patient needs hope. This was a verse that was very meaningful to us. It gave us hope. And along the way, we would find different things that give us hope. But if we talk about spiritual care, and I say this to pastors, you need to make sure that someone is responsible. That person must understand the patient in their journey, and there are times when the patient does not want to know how bad it is, and there's times when the patient does want to know how bad it is. You know, there's a brother that I learned to know at BMA, lives 3 states away. When he found out I had cancer, he called me on the phone, and he said to me, he said, Leon, he said, do you have somebody to walk with you spiritually? You know, that's a good lesson. We know people that are sick, but somebody needs to walk with them spiritually. When I was first told that, you know, there's no hope and all those things, I had another CAT scan. I didn't have the results, and A friend came to me and said, what's the results of your latest CAT scan? I said, I don't know. Well, don't you want to know? No, I don't. Right now, I don't want to know anymore. That's as much as I want to know. Later, I wanted to know, but not at that time. Okay, so it's important to know what the patients look like. And I'll tell you the steps that I went through. Initially, I would have thought when someone says to me, you have cancer, that would just shock me and I'd fall apart. That isn't what happened. When they first told me, I wasn't really shocked that I had cancer. I guess maybe I didn't understand. But then, I was worried. I got worried. I realized how bad it was. And for me, I was ready to make funeral plans. I wanted to buy a lot. A plot is the word, not a lot, just a plot. I wanted to buy a plot. I wanted to put up a stone. I wanted to make funeral plans. Because I wanted peace of mind. That's what I wanted. I wanted to say, I've done everything. I'm ready. Get my business life in order. Get my personal life in order. And then I had peace. And now I'm grateful. That's the process I went through. Maybe not everybody goes through that. But that's what I did. You talk about giving care. You know, we need to say things that will let the person know that you really, really feel for them. You know, one of the best things, I remember a brother called me one night and he said, Leon, I just found out. He said, I want to call you. I don't know what to say to you. That was the best thing he could say. Because we don't know. But he still called. More than one person said, if I could take a day for you, I would. I tell you, chemotherapy, radiation is very, very cruel treatment. One person said, if I could take a treatment for you, I would. You know, they couldn't take a day for me. They couldn't take a treatment for me. But just the thought made me feel better. This was really interesting to me. It was after one of my treatments. I had had several by that time. It was a couple days later. I had been really sick. And my older brother called me one evening. He said, Leon, how are you doing? I said, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can go through this. I can't do it anymore. I'm just at the end. And he said, Leon, people are praying for you. They want you to get well. We had a conversation. He hung up the phone, and about 20 minutes later, my other brother called me. He said, hey, Leon, how you doing? I said, I don't know if I can do this. I can't go on like this. He said, well, you got to. This is the treatment you need. This is what has to happen, and you got to do it. You see the difference? The first one was emotional. The second was logical. And which one did I need? I needed both. I needed both. You need to do something to let them know that you're walking with them. A simple thing, keeping track. Because, you know, and I'm not criticizing anyone because I do the same thing. But when someone says, hey, I'm really walking through this with you. What did you have a treatment lately? Or what where are you standing in treatment? And something's not right there. The person that's really walking it through knows when my treatments were. They knew what was going on. So, you know, if you want to show that you care, jot it in your calendar. Call them at the times when they're, you know, special time that they had a treatment or going to have a treatment. Offer assistance to drive or mow, so on. I told you I went to Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins is 67 miles from my house. A round trip is 100 and whatever that is, 35 miles. We made over 80 trips to Johns Hopkins. And you can do the math. 80 times 135 miles. So if you want to do something, consider the expense there. Send cards, letters, handwritten notes. We got an unsigned thinking of you. I don't know who it was, still don't. It was nice. It was very nice. I found out one day that my niece got the idea. She called my family, my whole family, my brothers, my sisters, my nieces, my nephews, my children. She said, you know, I've designated such and such a day. We're going to have a fast and prayer day for Uncle. I tell you, brothers and sisters, you don't know what that does for a person. That day, my brother's, you know, I have a brother, I love him dearly, but he just loves juicy cheeseburgers. That day, at his job, the secretary said, we're going out for cheeseburgers at that place over here around the corner. You know the one that makes really good cheeseburgers? You want one? He said, no. He said, I'm fasting for my brother. Think of that. My grandchildren. Grandson. Grandpa. I fasted and prayed for you. The power of prayer and fasting. Church set a time. A teenage girl. She came up to me and she said, Liam, I'm going to fast for you tomorrow. I don't know, a teenage girl. My partner at work, before the colon surgery, he said, before the colon surgery, I was not allowed to have any food for 2 days. Just broth. I don't drink broth to this day. My partner said, Lynn, I want you to know I'm with you. I'm going to fast those 2 days. And he did. 2 days. He didn't have to. I think we need to give encouragement. There's flowers. We got chocolate-coated strawberries, fancy fruit. Especially on the treatment days. It was very nice. We did get money. We did get a gas card. Cards. Which was nice. My partner, every day I went for chemo or radiation, I took my cell phone with me. I don't know why, but I did. When I'd get there to the hospital and I'd check my voicemail or my text messages, there was a Bible verse from him. It was always different. A Bible verse of encouragement that I carried with me into the treatment. The follow-up calls 2 to 3 days after the treatment were really nice. How did it go this time? We had one woman in our church that sent me a card every single week for 2 years. I want to talk a little bit about do's and don'ts. Really, I say you must support the patient in their decision for treatment. Or non-treatment. Support them where they are. If they made a decision to treat, support them. If they made a decision to not treat, support that. If they make a decision to use some kind of a supplement or whatever it is, do that. Support them. You got to support the patient where they're at because you don't know exactly where they are. In my case, the doctor said, they do not want me to take supplements. As a matter of fact, a harmless thing like folic acid. She said, go home and check your daily vitamin. If it has more than this amount of folic acid in, I don't want you to take it. Because it affects the effectiveness of the treatment. Don't high pressure your remedies, potions, supplements. They may all be good, just don't high pressure them. Do give examples of people that you know that were cured. I'll tell you what, when you I was so encouraged to hear about people that had cancer and were cured. Don't tell stories about people you know of that had cancer and died. Keep that to yourself. That's not something you tell them. Do ask questions about their treatment. Do remember their spouses and children and parents and other close relatives. Don't visit them if you're sick. Allow them not to shake your hand. You know, a cancer treatment patient, resistance is low. To a healthy person, a cold is inconvenient. To a person who's going through treatment, a cold is much, much more than an inconvenience. Do respect that. I can't say enough about that. That, you know, for 2 years, I stopped shaking hands. For 2 years, I didn't shake hands. For 2 years, I didn't get sick. And don't eat at salad bars either. This is a big one. Here I am. They tell me that I need to be cancer-free for 5 years, and then I can consider myself cured. I get scans. So far, there's no evidence of disease. I don't want to think that my cancer is in remission, because remission means what? It's going to come back. I don't think my cancer is in remission. But I can't say I'm cured. All I can say is there's no evidence of disease. What should I say to someone when they say to me, is your cancer in remission? You see what I'm saying? Now, if it's a kind of cancer that goes into remission, comes out, that's okay. But in my case, I don't expect it to come back. And don't minimize the results by comparing them to someone you heard of. And this was one that I heard. You know, I knew I was going to get a bag. And I'll tell you, the first couple months, the bag is a... And people would say to me, oh, Leon, I know so-and-so. She's had a bag and you'd never know it. Let me tell you what, the person that has a bag knows it. Okay? Let's talk a little bit about the spiritual factor. You know, God works in strange ways. If there's one thing that I keep saying over and over again, the cancer patient needs hope. We would see God working in ways that gave us hope. I'll give you an example. I started chemo treatment. I had about 2 treatments, and my eyes hurt, my head hurt. And I said to the nurse, she says, how you doing? I said, you know, my eyes are bad. Oh, well, you know, it goes with next time. How you doing? Oh, my eyes. She said, you better go get your eyes checked. So, okay. It's the chemo, I'm thinking. I go to get my eyes checked. I said to the eye doctor, I said, look, I don't want to do an eye test and all that. Just see, do I have glaucoma? Is there something back there? Is the chemo messing me up? I don't want an eye test. He says, well, the first thing we're going to do is an eye test. He did an eye test. You know what he said is wrong with my eyes? He said, your glasses are 4 levels too strong. That chemo is improving your vision. I went back to the doctor. I said, look at these glasses. They're not as thick as they used to be. The chemo is improving my vision. She said, I never heard of that. To me, that's God, right? I told you that when I went down there, I said to the doctor, I want treatment now. And, you know, I got this tooth that's giving me a problem. I need a root canal. And she said, well, Mr. Martin, she said, we can start treatment now, but you can't have a treatment. You can't have a root canal after we start treatment. I don't want anybody working in your mouth. If you can have a root canal tomorrow, then she said on Wednesday, we'll put your port in, and on Thursday, you'll have a CAT scan, and on Friday, we'll start chemo. Did you ever call your dentist and say, I got a toothache, and what does he say? How about next Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock? You know, I called this woman about root canal. I told her my situation. She said, you come in tomorrow at noon. We'll work you in over lunch. I went there. I had a root canal, and then she said, now I'm going to put this temporary filling in for you, and then you go to your dentist and have this a permanent filling. She said, because you're going to need a crown. I said, doctor, you can't do that. I can't have any mouth surgery after today. Well, she said, I'll call your dentist and have him put a crown on for you today. Huh, I'm thinking, that's a joke. She says to her secretary, call this dentist and tell him that Mr. Martin's going to come down for a crown. Well, the secretary came back. She said, he can't work him in today. The dentist, I guess they're not dentists. I don't know what they're called. Whatever they are, whoever does root canals. She goes to the phone. She comes back later. She said, your dentist didn't think he had time. And I said, is there anybody else in your practice that can give Mr. Martin a crown today? And, well, he wasn't sure. So I told him, well, look, if you don't want to give him a crown, I'm going to get a crown for him someplace else because Mr. Martin is getting a crown today. She said, so you can go right down. He'll put a crown on for you today. You know what? God is working through people. He was working through her, and she was willing to make that call and be assertive. I told you that Avastin was pretty harsh. I know of two people that had Avastin, only two. Both of those people died. The reason they died is because they couldn't handle Avastin. The one, as soon as they started administering Avastin, she passed out, couldn't handle it, couldn't get the treatment, and died. The doctor said to me, when we give you Avastin, we're going to really watch you because we want to see how you tolerate it. We're not going to give it to you the first time, but we're going to give it to you the second time. The second time I went, the nurse said to me, now, Mr. Martin, she said, when I give you the Avastin, she said, I'm going to really watch you. I'm a preacher. I try to calm people, give them hope, give them encouragement. I know all the verses. I was worried. I wasn't at peace. I knew that I needed that Avastin, and I knew that I didn't know anyone that could handle it. We went down there that day, the chemo lab. I was right inside a big window, and I was worried. I laid there, and the nurse came. She said, now, Mr. Martin, we're going to start this other drug first, and when that's done, I'm going to come back and we're going to start the Avastin, and I'm going to really watch you because, okay. It was a rainy day. It was gray day, rainy day. I looked out on the sidewalk, people carrying umbrellas, the cars are going by, the water's splashing. It stopped raining. Sky parted. Sun came through, shined in the window, right on my legs. I could just feel myself relax. I said to Carolyn, God did that. The nurse came over. She said, okay, Mr. Martin, I'm going to start the Avastin. The clouds rolled back in and started to rain. I had no negative effects other than the regular side effects. It was a couple weeks later. We were down there, same window, same spot. I said to Carolyn, remember that day the sun shone in here? Do you realize that this window is facing west? And look out, the sun's not over there, the sun's over here. I'm not saying that it was a miracle. I'm saying that however God made that sun shine in on my legs is what I needed at that time. But I'm not going to say it was a miracle. I don't think God moved the sun for me. But whatever he did is what I needed at that time. I talked about prayer and fasting. I told you that the lung doctor said to me, it's going to be very, very painful. The day I went for lung surgery, the drill is you go in there, you go into this room, you take all your clothes off, you put these gowns on, you put these funny little booties on, those stockings that come up to your knees, and they started an IV, and I'm laying in bed, I'm laying in this gurney in this ward, and I'm waiting for them to take me into surgery. The lung surgeon come down. Now remember, my family's praying and fasting. The church is praying and fasting. The lung surgeon comes down, pulls back the curtain, walks in, says, Mr. Martin, says, get out of bed, we're going for a walk. I'm ready for surgery. I got this gown on that's open in the back, you know. We walk out of the curtain, and the nurse, hey, where are you going? Hey, what's going on here? The doctor said, Mr. Martin and I are going down to CAT scan. We'll be back, but I want to see how he looks right now. We went down the hall, got on the elevator. I'm in this, you with me? We get down to CAT scan, the nurse is waiting. I go in, the nurse says, this never happens. The doctor never brings a patient down here. I had my scan, I walked out, the doctor's standing there waiting on me. We went back up in the elevator, get back, he says, get back in bed. I got back in bed, a couple minutes later, they came, wheeled me in the operating room. They did the surgery laparoscopically. He said, but you're still going to have tremendous pain. I had a epidural for 3 days, and then I went to Tylenol. I took Tylenol for a week and a half. When I went back a month later, the nurse said, where's your pain? I said, nurse, I don't have any pain. She's going through her file. She said, didn't you just have major lung surgery? Yeah. And you don't have pain? No. Well, she said, that's not the way it is. So she leaves. The doctor comes in. He says, how's your pain? I said, doctor, I don't have any pain. He says, patients come back here a month later, and they're begging me for more pain medication. And you don't have any pain. I said, no, doctor, I don't have any pain. Carolyn was with me. Carolyn said, you know, doctor, there was a lot of people praying for him. He said, there you have it. He said, it's nothing that I did. He said, I didn't do it. Was it the CAT scan that morning? Was it the prayer and fasting? Why did he take me down there? That's not usual. Think about it. Why did he do it? Did God prompt him and say, if you took a look at this man this morning, I'll show you where those spots are. Well, I was able to tolerate the second round of chemo. After 4 months, the doctor said, you know, we've been giving you the full dose. You can't have any more. We're going to stop. Afterwards, the head of the colon cancer department met with me. She said, you know, this case was unique. This case was unique because there was no complications. She said, you know, colon surgery is dirty surgery, and we didn't have any infections. There's some practical lessons I learned. If you're 50 and didn't have a colonoscopy, you better go get one. I say you should see your doctor if you have symptoms. Cancer doesn't just go away. Eat well. I've been warned, red meat once a week. But the good news is, pork is not red meat. Exercise 30 minutes a day, most days of the week. You know, I exercised before. It's a lot easier for me to exercise now. Handshaking spreads disease. I don't have the answer for being nice to people, but, you know, wash your hands often. I carry those little hand sanitizers, and it doesn't embarrass me to put a little on and wipe them. I'm a pastor. People will come out of church on a Sunday morning. They'll blow their nose in their hand, put their hand and hanky in the other hand, and then shake my hand. I'm just more sensitive to that than I used to be. I told you about treatment. The one thing I didn't explain to you is the port. The doctor said to me, we're going to place your port. Well, to me, that sounds like a pretty easy deal. They're just going to place it. That's not as easy deal. It's surgery. I have a little port right here in my chest. There's a tube that runs from this port up here. You might be able to see it right here. That tube goes into this vein that comes down from my head. There's a vein comes up across my chest. That tube drops into that vein and drops right into my heart. When I get chemo, they put it through my port because the chemo will deteriorate the veins in your hands and eventually ruin your veins. So actually, when I had chemo, the chemo went right into this vein that went into my heart. There are advantages of a teaching hospital. It's cutting-edge technology. The doctors are very capable. I told you about the tumor board, the team approach. The team approved the procedure, and they were all on the same team. They all said, I can do it, we can do it, let's go for the cure on this one. Some hospitals advertise that we treat cancer patients. I wouldn't go there. I want to go to a hospital that cures cancer patients. You know the difference? Attitude's a factor. One of the doctors said to me, Mr. Martin, I knew you'd get well. He said, because the second day that you were in the hospital, I could tell that you wanted to get well. If you're going to give any counsel to a cancer patient, don't let them stay in bed. You must get dressed every day. If you want to get dressed and then lay down on the sofa, that's okay. But get up and get dressed. Don't be a sickie. You got to get out of bed. You got to get dressed. And if you want to lay down and sleep, lay on the recliner or whatever. But get up and get dressed. Be normal. Get out of the house. Take them out. I know a cancer patient. Her husband would come home and force her to get in the car, and they'd go drive around and get out of the house. Change of pace. Change of scenery. Cancer patients have few options, and there's very few opportunities for them to make decisions. I was down there one day for treatment. I was getting my treatment. This ward there is a row of chairs, beds the whole way around the room, and then there's a couple in the middle. And this middle-aged woman, maybe about my age, maybe a little younger. When she came in, the nurse said, I don't remember what her name was, but Heidi. Heidi, the chair that you usually get is not available right now, but this chair is available. And Heidi stood there and just burst into tears. I first said to myself, what's the matter with this lady? What's wrong with this chair? But you know what? A cancer patient is always told, you're going to be here at 10 o'clock for your treatment. Okay, I'm going to put this needle in. Okay, now you're going to get sick. Now you're going to take these pills. Now you're going to come for surgery. A cancer patient can't make any decisions. They're always told, we're going to give you pain. When she had the opportunity to choose which chair she wants to sit in, it was a great decision for her. And when that was taken away, you see what I'm saying? Don't ask questions if your spouse doesn't want to know the answers. I would have been curious to know different times what my chances of survival are. And Carolyn said, don't ask the question. You do become more aware of life's real priorities. You can find humor. Before I went for lung surgery, I went out and ate ribs. I went to see how they were made. I have a grandson that can't sit still. He just runs from one thing to another. I mean, he just doesn't think. And I said to Karen, you know what I'm going to live by now? I'm going to say to myself, what would Gideon do? That's what I'm going to do. Be grateful for things that you have that may have been taken for granted previously. You know what? I'm happy to have a bag because I'm alive. Seemingly insignificant things are greatly appreciated. And I'll just do these really quickly. Your emotions are softer. You can't handle stress. Your tolerance for pain is reduced. You know, one time I went for a crown. I had a crown before. And I said to the doctor, look, that Novocaine, I don't like the way it feels when it's coming out. Just do it without Novocaine. You know what? I wouldn't do it anymore. If you can give me anything so I don't feel pain, I want it. Your tolerance for pain does not go up. Your tolerance for pain goes down. Expectations of life are lower. Do you want to have a bag and live, or do you want to not have a bag? People naturally want to live. God placed in them the drive to protect and extend life. You are in charge of your own health care. Your family doctor isn't always right. If you think he's not right, check. There's some nurses don't know how to do bags. Some nurses don't know how to do ports. You know, you're in charge of your own health care. And I just say that with love and affection for the medical field, but I think you are. Very quickly, I want you to give me a guess. When I went for my first round of chemo, I got those three drugs that I told you, 5-FU, oxaliplatin, and Avastin. I want you to tell me how much you think just the drugs cost for one treatment. Quickly, give me a guess.
$12,000.
How much?
$12,000.
$12,000. You know what you're talking about, don't you? Cost $13,000 for one treatment. Every month, I wrecked a really nice car. So, you know, consider your health insurance. And here's one thing that got me through a lot. Do not live days twice. When I knew I was going to have lung surgery that was painful, I didn't think about it today. Because if I would have thought about it today, it would have made me feel bad. Then when I had the lung surgery, I would have felt bad again. Why do I want to feel bad twice? I'll feel bad the day I feel bad, but I'm not going to feel bad before I get there. And I want to leave you with one more thing, and then I'm finished. But I really, really can identify with this. Live life like someone left the gate open. But I say this, you don't know if he's headed to dig up the flower bed or if he's headed to save some drowning child. Live life like that, but not to dig up the flower bed. Does anybody have any questions?
So between the two, you say the chemo was the roughest, not necessarily the surgery.
The chemo and the radiation were worse for me than the surgery. What's bad is you know you're going to feel bad, and you have to force. You know, one day my brother-in-law volunteered to drive me for a treatment. I got in his car and I said, Ray, lock the door. If you don't lock the door, I just might get back out. And it went on, longer and longer and longer. See, after you have surgery, every day gets better. But that's not the way it is with treatment. Every day gets worse. And with radiation, it doesn't stop the last day of treatment. Radiation goes on for weeks. It keeps working. And you feel bad for weeks after radiation. So that was my experience.
I certainly agree, Leon did a very good job explaining. I mean, exceptional. And I would echo what you said about the family doctors or internal medicine. That was an embarrassment. Someone, a family doctor said that. You should never go rectal spotting or bleeding. It's true, hemorrhoids are a dime a dozen. But cancer can be deadly.
Yeah.
You just cannot ignore that.
Right.
That's investigated. And you did well, better than most people at 50. You went in and got the colonoscopy.
Yeah.
Very hard to get men and women to do that. But if you were to wait 5 years, 7 years, you'd be far more advanced.
A woman said, I know a woman that's 60 years old. She never had a colonoscopy. I said, why didn't you get one? She said, I don't want anybody to see my behind. Let me tell you what. If you have surgery, there's a lot of people going to see a lot more in your behind. Maybe that's not language for this topic. I'm not sure. But, yes.
Did you ever consider not going through it?
No, I never did. I never did. I wanted to go for it. I wanted, just like I told the doctor, I want to do whatever I can to get well. And it never entered my mind to not do it.
How can we pray for you the most or the best at this point?
You know, I'm going to have a 3-month follow-up on Monday. If I'm clear then, I'm clear 11 months. They tell me that if you're clear for 2 years, it's very likely you'll be clear for 5. So the next 13 months to me is pretty important.
So Monday's when that is?
That's on Monday. Yeah.
I believe we often make a commitment to pray for them.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thanks for your kind attention. If anybody has any questions, you can, there's no question that you can't ask me. I'll tell you anything. Yes?
I'm wondering if we could clap for an exceptional job.
Oh. Thank you. Thank you for your attention. Thanks for coming. If you know of anybody that you can offer encouragement, do what you can. And never say, I don't know what to say.
I think Carolyn gets a through room.
She has been an excellent supporter. Right. Yep. I don't know what I'd do without a good spouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leon, we're so glad you're here with us.
That's right.
You know what? I'm so happy to be. I thank God every single day that I'm alive. Too many people are taking life for granted.
I just want to say the reason I knew that price is because our daughter went through cancer and she told me the price.
Yeah. I can hardly believe it. When you said 12,000, I knew you knew the answer. I knew it. Yeah. So.
I'd just like to give one other thing. Actually, my father had bladder cancer. And Bob's were there, and we were all there previous to him going into surgery, and he asked the doctor, can we as a family have prayer together? And he said, sure. But not only that, he got down on his knees beside the bed and led the prayer.
Yeah.
It was tremendous. My dad never took, he was over 80 years old, never took the first pain medication after the surgery.
Yeah, that's remarkable. But you know what? And this is the part that I said, I'm giving you facts, you interpret them. We were at a wedding reception, and I was telling the people beside me about my experience. And there was a couple across the table that I didn't know. And the woman said, you know, your story is very nice, but our infant died, and we prayed for him too. Okay? I think somebody else had a question.
One of the things you had up there was consider insurance, medical insurance. Did you have insurance? Or
you know what? I had excellent insurance. I have no complaints about my insurance. And yes, we paid deductible in some small amounts. But overall, the insurance paid for it. And never did they deny treatment. And we had no problems. I am so, you know, I do not have a problem paying an insurance premium anymore. Ever. Because, and I didn't do the math, but I'm sure it's roughly over $300,000 so far for me. But I say the part about the price because you're all pastors, and if a congregation thinks that they can afford this, be aware. It can get pretty expensive. All right, thank you. I don't want to hold you up. Thank you.